Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Stephen Jones, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs at the DoD. Also joining us in our conversation is Russ Sanford, partner in IBM's DoD consulting practice. Stephen, given the complexities your organization faces and the changing national security threats, what are the plans to ensure the U.S. Armed Forces are provided with world-class operational medicine capabilities while delivering the comprehensive TRICARE benefits to your beneficiaries?
Well, first and foremost, the military health system offers a comprehensive care from time of enlistment through the full life cycle of our service members. And during this time, we ensure that our service members are fit and healthy as members of our fighting force. We monitor their care through periodic health assessments. In addition to their assessments pre-deployment, we also provide our service members with vaccines and protective measures necessary prior to deployment to keep them safe wherever they may go. I'm very pleased with the proactive stance that we've taken at in the military health system to ensure that we're giving the warfighter the best care. Not only do we have exceptional personnel close to the front where the action is happening, but we also have through the air transport, not only on the battlefield, but then once they get back to the base hospital, of course, the Air Force provides excellent service back to Landstuhl in Germany. And the reason we go to Landstuhl is because that's sent away from the theater back to the United States. So that allows the patient, again, to get a high level of care. It allows the airplane to be refueled. And then, of course, if needed, that individual can then be brought back to Walter Reed, Bethesda, or Brooke Army Medical Center, where they can get the highest tertiary care available that we have. If you look at death to casualty rates, we're some of the lowest in history because of that transportation system, because of those dedicated individuals, and because of their training that they've been provided before they go into harm's way. And also, as you know, the military is good at lessons learned. And so through always trying to assess what we do, we try to improve that system and improve those products that we have and make that available to those individuals who are in the field. Just as a for instance, if you are wounded on the battlefield and you get to some medic or some type of medical facility, your chances of surviving are 96 to 97%. Again, the highest in any war that's ever occurred.
That's a phenomenal statistic. Technological advances continually influence the manner in which healthcare is provided. And in fact, at the start of the show, you took us through a little walk starting from the Civil War to present day. Could you tell us how you see the role of technology in assisting your organization? And would you give us a sense of the various technological efforts underway by DoD Health Affairs to benefit the service members and enhance the provision of care?
Well, again, that's a subject that we could take an entire program on. But because of our robust economy, and entrepreneurship in this great U.S. of A., you know, we do have technology, and that does help drive and provide better quality care. First, we talk about ALTA, which is electronic health record, which makes that information available to individuals. Secondly, we can talk about all the scientific improvements that have made through medications and drugs. And, of course, third, the entire medical device pieces where, CAT scans and PET scans, that's a normal way of operations now so that we can diagnose with a non-invasive way so that the physicians can provide the necessary treatment. Because of that, plus we mentioned the transportation area, some of the standardizations of equipment that allows those machines to operate at high altitudes. It doesn't happen by accident. It has to be a lot of work. Of course, we're also concerned with vaccines, again, prophylactic, any new drug or protection we can provide to those who are going in harm's way before they go. And then on the mental health side, which gets a good bit of discussion, you know, the armed forces, particularly in this case, the Army and the Marines, have stepped out and have mental health teams on the ground to ensure that they're there to assess and work with those soldiers and Marines who may have difficulty in some of the stress that they are seeing or some of the stress they are under, so that they can get appropriate counseling right there close to where they are. So those are just some of the efforts and some of the technologies that have changed healthcare, not only in the commercial sector, but in the military as well.
Stephen, cost containment remains a driving focus within many of the government agencies, but you also have the added challenge of access to care as well as the quality of the care. How do you manage all three of these challenges? Do you look into the future to see a point of concern with regards to the level of services you want to be able to provide to active and retired service members and the level of funding that you anticipate having available?
Well, as you know, health care and cost of health care is a major issue for our nation. And as it's a major issue for our nation, it's also a major issue for us. I've alluded to earlier that we are now, the military health system is 8% of the top line of the Department of Defense. And if you run projections, by 2015, we will be 13% of the entire Department of Defense budget, which, of course, raises concerns by those joint chiefs and the chairman and the secretary and others who have to make tough budget decisions as to where funding has to be placed. So we are concerned with cost. We're doing everything that we can within the system, Russ, to try to reduce cost. A few examples. One would be, of course, we've instituted a formulary for our pharmacy where those drugs that cost less and have other drugs that treat just as well. Of course, we encourage the use of those drugs as well as generic drugs. We have about 7% of our people are using generics now, which, of course, reduce costs significantly on the pharmaceutical side. Business planning, we've instituted what's called performance-based budgeting for all of our military treatment facilities. And it's much like the DRGs or the diagnostic-related groups in the private sector, where if you can be more efficient and treat more patients, your budget is increased not just, a percentage every year, but on the amount of productivity that you perform. So it's a new way of resourcing to those military treatment facilities. We are always looking at shared services, and those things that the Army, Air Force, and Navy are doing that are similar that we could put together and do as one and be able to still ensure that we have the quality of care, but we can take out some of that administrative cost. So we're looking at shared services in some of the logistics areas, of course, some of the research areas, of course, in the electronic health areas and other areas that we could benefit by making sure that we're working as one rather than three separate components.
Stephen, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. We've talked a bit about the warfighter and the current war on terror. But I understand also that your office plays a role in the tracking, monitoring, and preparing for other threats, such as avian flu. Could you elaborate a little bit on the national strategy around this area?
Well, as you're aware, Homeland Security and HHS plays a major role in ensuring that the nation is prepared for, God forbid, that we would have a major pandemic. Of course, the Department of Defense is a major player within that as well, not only from ensuring that our troops and our civilians are prepared to meet their mission should that happen, but also as a backup when needed to those other agencies. For example, as you know, every time we have a major catastrophic event, the federal government is called upon. Oftentimes, it's our guards and reserves that are called upon to ensure that the civilian sector is backed up. So, one, I guess a point I would like to make is that so Secretary Leavitt, HHS, says, I mean, it's up to the local and state entities to ensure that they have everything in place. But then when necessary, of course, the federal government must be ready to back them up and to take necessary action. We're working with those agencies I mentioned, of course, in the surveillance and response area and surveillance and response system, what we call is our GICE system. And hopefully through this surveillance, we will be able to respond to infectious diseases, be able to pick up those diseases should they be occurring, any hot spots. And we are fortunate to have a number of laboratories. And, of course, the CDC, which is, of course, Center for Disease Control, are partnering with us and have individuals located in those laboratories and are working with those countries so that should a pandemic flu should occur, that we will be able to take early action, as soon as possible.
Great. What does the future hold for DOD health affairs? We will ask Dr. Stephen Jones, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs at the Department of Defense, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.